A Civil War Without Guns, The Miners Strike 40 Years On. Dave Griffiths, Socialist Party West Midlands Regional Secretary. Col Not Dole, with the cry across Britain as 180,000 members of National Union of Mineworkers, NUM, in 180 pits began walking out on strike in March 1984. It became a long, bitter industrial dispute, a whole year, fought with enormous courage and elan by miners, the biggest workers' struggle for generations. Fought not only against the publicly owned National Coal Board, NCB, but, as miners increasingly realized, the whole British capitalist state that had been mobilized to attack them. The NCB, pushed by Thatcher's Tory government, had provocatively announced a program of pit closures. Miners, one of the strongest groups of trade union organized workers, struck to defend their pits, their industry, their communities and whole way of life. From the first walkouts in Yorkshire, the strike spread across the coalfields of Britain, and posed a major threat to the Tory government. 80% of energy came from coal. As rail workers refused to move coal stocks, the threat arose of the lights going out. It's laughable to hear Tories today claim green credentials for taking Britain off coal. The truth is, this was a brutal battle by the bosses, prepared to smash an industry, to subdue the working class, so they could let their free market rip across Britain. Coal Not Dole, was the miner slogan, because Thatcher had unleashed mass unemployment as a weapon. The Tories were destroying publicly owned industries, steel, motors etc. and much of Britain's industrial base. They hoped to smash the trade unions. Mass unemployment created fear and desperation. News bulletins reported thousands more job losses daily. Incidentally, the Tories covered the cost of unemployment by selling off the family silver, public industries, a process continued under Blair. Today we are being ripped off by private firms in water, gas, electric, telecoms, post, rail, and so on. The defeat of workers in this period cleared the way for modern bosses Britain, where we see the widest gap in wealth and income seen by any living person. It was a political watershed. A decade earlier, the miners had brought down a Tory government. In the 1972 strike, involving the Battle of Saltley Gate, where 15,000 mass pickets, including thousands of local engineering workers, closed a vital coke depot, the miners defeated Heath's government. When Heath, punch drunk from other defeats, called a rematch in 1974, he called an election saying, "It's me or the miners." It wasn't him. A Labour government was returned, the bosses were fuming. As economic crisis gripped, and bosses sought to attack workers' living standards, strengthened trade unions resisted with growing militancy. Labour could only restrain them for a couple of years. Thatcher was elected as the boss's agent in 1979 and the capitalist class set about a major assault on the working class. The attack was well prepared. They passed anti-union laws, including enforcing postal, rather than workplace voting, so the Tory press could interfere in union elections. They didn't attack all industries at once, but one by one picked workers off. They would have noted the failure of the leaders of the Trades Union Congress, TUC, to coordinate any response. The Tories longed for revenge on the miners and nearly staggered into a major strike in 1981. But, as wildcat strikes raced across the coal fields, they retreated. They were not yet fully prepared to face this strong group of workers. Miners worked in a tough environment, and were tough men. Their very work brought strong comradeship and discipline, and humor. Many had served in the armed forces. The government built up coal stocks, arranged more coal and fuel imports for power stations, did deals with right-wing union leaders, beefed up and incentivized the police, many of whom to this day question their role in the strike, organized a force of non-union lorry drivers to move stocks, and slashed benefits strikers and their families were entitled to. Growing tensions grew through 1982-83 as government plans began to emerge. Rallies in towns and villages nationwide saw NUM President Arthur Scargill and other leaders begin to rouse miners to the coming challenge. Although the initial NCB announcement targeted 20 pits for closure, it was clear it would be many more. Late in 1983, the NUM organized an overtime ban to reduce coal stocks by winter 1984. but the Tories moved quicker. That nearly 200,000 workers, with huge support amongst the working class, would strike for a year seemed unimaginable beforehand. At the time, many on the left argued that miners had been bought off by those new inventions, lager, TV, and videos and food courtiness. They'd never strike. Militant, the Socialist Party's predecessor, resisted these arguments. We were one of the few organizations politically prepared for the strike. We saw young miners in particular play a magnificent role. As one said, they threw down the gauntlet, we picked it up. Despite repression and suffering government attempts to starve them back to work, the miners showed great determination and initiative, and raised millions of pounds in solidarity from the public. Miners and their families were proud people. The idea of begging went against the grain. But realizing the dispute wouldn't be short, the younger men and women support groups rose to the occasion, traveling the length and breadth of Britain and internationally, raising solidarity and financial support at factories and on the streets. They toured railway lines, winning support from train drivers to stop coal moving, picketed coal stocks, power stations as well as pits. Huge rallies took place at NUM HQ in Sheffield. At the same time, the Broad Left Organising Committee, BLOC, organised a conference of over 2,000 shop stewards to mobilise rank and file support and push for solidarity action across the trade union movement, calling for a 24-hour general strike against the government. The dispute was clearly central to the future of organised workers nationwide. A miners' victory would be in the interests of all. But from the trade union tops, little beyond words and donations came. There was also resistance to the strike in some areas, particularly Nottinghamshire. The NUM was a federated union, made up of different areas with different numbers of pits and ease of obtaining coal. This had its negative aspects. A recently introduced productivity scheme reinforced the potential division between areas. Some earned much more from it than others, and some areas were less threatened by closures than others. Pithead ballots were organized on an area, not national basis. A previous ballot seeking industrial action over pit closures was won in Yorkshire, Scotland, South Wales and Kent, but not in Nottinghamshire or the Midlands, for example. In itself this was not a shock, the union had never won a ballot over this issue. But, as the threat to the industry became clearer, support for action was growing. As the Yorkshire walkout spread, within a week 80% of miners nationwide were on strike. But seams and knots were difficult. Large pickets from other areas, along with knot strikers, sought to picket out working pits. This physical challenge meant some still working, dwelt on the idea that others were trying to force them on strike, rather than facing up to the threat to their industry and union. In contrast, at Littleton Colliery, Cannock, Militant already had members. Seeing events in knots, they decided to organize the Cannock lads to shut their own pit before outside areas arrived. They organized a shift walkout, and, as they prepared to picket the next shift, pickets arrived from Wales. They were welcomed to support, but told that the local lads would do the picketing and talking to the incoming shift. Within a couple of days, only three or four were left working. Had such a left network been encouraged in the NUM, scenes across the Midlands may have been different. National ballot. The lack of a national ballot was used as an excuse by some, including by some inexcusable trade union leaders, for not organizing solidarity action. In fact, a national ballot would have been won comfortably, removed excuses and strengthened the fight. But already 86% were on strike against the baying of media, bosses, and Tory and Labour politicians for a ballot. In many eyes, the strike was already on and dramatically affecting production. They weren't going to be dictated to by the likes of these. Prominent football figures like Brian Clough and Jackie Charlton came out for the miners. Nottingham Forest fans took abuse of scabs at matches they attended. Ian McGregor, Thatcher's American puppet boss of the NCB, declared that he wanted to hear from the women, hoping they'd push their men back to work. He received a resounding response as miners' wives' groups sprang up everywhere declaring they shall not starve, cadging food for food kitchens, and attending picket lines. Meanwhile, the police, now organized as a national militarized force, increased their aggression, making thousands of arrests to deplete picket lines. Backed by courts, they restricted picketing rights and used roadblocks across the country. They restricted movement even in workers' own towns. One canny clad got a week's jail and criminal record for walking to get a pint of milk for the strike center, deemed to have crossed a quarter mile restriction by 10 yards. There have rarely been more phone taps. And we saw huge TV and media propaganda. If you believed their daily reports of miners going back to work, 1 million of the 180,000 miners had gone back. Then TV outdid itself with its distorted coverage of the Orgrove mass pickets, a battle set up by government and police chiefs, with riot police and cavalry charges against workers. Truly, we were seeing a civil war without guns. 55 miners were threatened with life sentences for riot, until police were found to be lying in court. The strike moved through summer. Thatcher farcically claimed she wouldn't intervene, but we saw police and dark agencies working for government increasingly organizing returns to work. As one super scab later admitted, "I knew they had lots of money, political money. They organized the National Working Miners Committee, and later assisted the UDM, Union of Democratic Miners, SICK, to undermine the NUM." She outrageously declared the miners to be the enemy within, starkly revealing the truth of class society under capitalism, and insulting many men who had served their country. They launched a legal assault on the NUM. Declaring the strike illegal, they sought to sequestrate, steal, all the union's funds. The TUC had a Congress decision to organize general strike action if any union faced sequestration under Tory laws, but didn't act when the NUM was attacked. But coal stocks were still falling, and miners anticipated general winter helping their action take effect. By autumn, the Tories feared losing. Especially when PIT deputies, supervisors without whom no PIT could operate, union knackered voted by over 80% to strike in October. Thatcher's government was hanging by a thread. Electricity bosses estimated Scargill whirlwind by Christmas. But their threatened strike was shabbily called off with meaningless promises. The miners entered winter feeling more isolated, especially given the lack of TUC action and the betrayal of Labour leader, Neil Kinnock, who didn't want to see militancy pay. Later awarded with a peerage, he was to repeat this with Liverpool City Council the following year. All torture victims have their thresholds, as a miner's mum put it, not everybody was strong enough. Despite widening social support for the miners, such as from Pride and others, there was a drift back to work at end of 1984 and early 1985. So, in March 1985, the NUM voted 98 to 91 for an organized return to work. Aftermath: the strike had cost the Tories a fortune, but they had inflicted a serious defeat on a strong group of workers. Afterwards, demoralization was exaggerated, and became an excuse for inaction by trade union leaders. Within 5 years, 18 million people defied the law, refusing to pay their poll tax, and brought Thatcher crashing down. A great win, but not one that compensated for the miners' defeat. There was devastation in villages as closure programs rolled on, but miners also rebuilt their strength in pits. At Littleton, where a large majority were back at work by March and the UDM had a base, a walkout when 12-monthers were picked on was joined by nearly every miner. The desire to reunite was strong and the NUM quickly became dominant again. Closures: the Tories denied a mass closure program. But the reward for those fooled by their lies was to see 90% of pits closed within 10 years. The UDM was exposed, but had done its damage. But most decisive in the defeat of this historic strike, where workers showed their capacity to struggle to the end, was that this was not matched by Labour and TUC leaders. For Marxists, it has many lessons for the future, and in understanding how the working class moves. It also revealed how reactionary ideas are washed away in struggle. A couple of young miners in contact with the National Front were offered money to attack a pre-strike militant meeting in Cannock. On hearing that a miner was speaking, they refused. Later, one was collecting in London and saw how many black workers were donating. As he told them about the demonization of miners in the media, they'd smile and say, "We know, we suffer it all the time, The scales came off his eyes and he phoned us excitedly to tell us. He joined Militant, and supports us to this day. Had the miners won, the whole free market Tory project would have been challenged. The working class, inspired to take up struggle, would have put the end of the Tories in sight. The push to create new Labour, which Thatcher described as her greatest achievement, would be reversed. British history could have been very different. Which is why Militant fought with every sinew, to help prosecute the dispute, during which 500 miners joined us as the events of the strike revealed the true character of capitalism and failure of the labor movement's leaders,